Good morning. It's 7:29 on March 12th, Monday morning. Wow. So yeah, I got a lot of good feedback on the comments about what I should do to add to my daily regimen. And there's some really good ideas. The weight training is an interesting one. Weight resistance training. It's more than I want to take on at the moment, but what I've decided to do is a collection of 10 jumping jacks, 10 curls, and 10 push-ups three times a day. I did the first set this morning. I already feel it. Yikes. I may have to face this in over the next few days. But I think that's going to help. If nothing else, the core, my stomach muscles need to be strengthened a lot before I begin to even think about doing too much. So, that's cool. That'll work out, I think. I haven't yet set the timer on my watch for them, but I'll have to do that, so I don't forget to do them in the middle of the day. So the picture this morning is quite dark because it's daylight savings time, which means what used to be 5:30 is now 6:30. Luckily, the sun is still up by then. And so 7 o'clock, which used to be 6 o'clock, still has enough light for me to get by with, which works out okay. Shoot, I was listening to a podcast this morning. I meant to be talking to my class about Cuban a little bit this morning. The issue with professional development is really an interesting challenge. Good morning. The problem, of course, is that for most teachers, professional development is something that's done to them, not something they do for themselves. And the reality of education is that it requires a schedule. And the problem is that learning can't wait. So a teacher who needs to know how to do something needs to know how to do it now. They don't need to know how to do it 3 months from now when the professional development is scheduled and they go and they sit in a room with 15 other teachers for an hour and have somebody talk about it. What they need is to really be able to learn it. The problem, ironically, seems to be that teachers don't know how to learn. I realize that this is kind of a carte blanche sort of generalization. But the reality does seem to be that without the familiar paradigms of teacher, classroom, lesson, text, teachers are pretty much helpless when it comes to learning, which makes for an interesting dilemma when we start talking about teachers who need to be teaching students how to become lifelong learners. That's right up there with the other 21st century skills that they don't have, which makes it difficult for them to teach them. This is particularly obvious when you start talking with people about Cuban. The book is Teaching Machines. And in it, Cuban recaps a history of technology from the introduction of radio into the classroom and what happened after that. And what he points out is that the problems that stood in the way of adoption of technology in 1910 are the same problems facing adoption of technology in 2010, 100 years. We have the same problems. The technology is different, but we have exactly the same problems. The problems have to do with the price and availability of equipment. But beyond that, it has to do with the fact that the teachers don't know what the technology is or why they might want to use it because they've never learned how to learn with it. I keep beating up on teachers, but I really don't mean to because teachers are, you know, I'm a teacher. The problem is that like many fields, the internet changes everything. It's It's not enough to do email. It's not enough to watch the occasional YouTube video. It's not enough to download a YouTube video. It's not enough to have a blog. It's not enough not to be on, you know, to have sampled Twitter and found it to be useless. If you're an educator and you're not playing with these spaces, I would argue that if you're an author or reader or practically any adult in the early half of the 21st century, and you are not conversant with these tools, I'm preaching to the choir, of course, because everybody who's listening to this, I think, probably has at least some of this stuff under their belt. You listen to podcasts, that's a big step up. You read blogs, even if you don't have one of your own. You're familiar with the tool called FeedReader, even if you don't use one. You at least know what it is. A podcatcher. And you're at least conversationally aware of what social media really entails, as opposed to what most people think of when they start talking about social media. So, you know, you guys are all, if you're listening to me, you're ahead of the curve. But there's a lot of people, and I run into them all the time when I get emails from fans who read the first three books and don't know how to get a podcast, don't know where to go to get a podcast, don't know what a podcast is, download it and put it on their computer and then get bored sitting there in front of the computer listening to me talk to them. So there are some issues there that involve not just knowing about technology, but a level of adoption that goes beyond I need to check my email today, and into it's part of my daily routine. It's part of what I need to do in order to stay informed in the world. It's part of what I need to do in order to be a fully formed individual. And I appreciate that there are a lot of people who don't include that kind of stuff in their definitions of fully formed individual. That's perfectly fine. You can choose to live in whichever culture you want. But for teachers, I think for teachers there's an obligation. I think for teachers there's a requirement that as part of the profession, you have to sort of buy into the idea that because the world is constantly changing, and because now the world is changing so much faster than it ever has before, that teachers really need to commit to staying up to those changes. And waiting for a summer course, waiting for a professional development, waiting for something to be done to you to fill your head with the appropriate knowledge is really, really missing the boat. There's a conversation going on out there right now about the X Prize for education. And if we're going to reform education, what should the X Prize be for? So if you get a private rocket 150 miles above the Earth, you get an X Prize. There was a prize for like that. I think there's an X Prize for the first orbital vehicle. But the problem with education is that we can't agree on what the reform should look like. So awarding an X Prize for it becomes a really almost impossible kind of effort, because there's no way to tell when you've got it, because there's no predefined notion of what it should be. I keep making offhand and sometimes flip comments about how education needs its own Arab Spring. And I think I'm quite serious when I say that the only way that things are going to actually change is if there is a popular uprising and the icons of the institutions as they exist today are cast down, and we begin to build on the rubble of what used to be. Because sooner or later, it seems almost inevitable to me, sooner or later, the icons of the existing structures, the existing institutions, the existing organizations, they need to be brought down. The problem has to do with the singularity. An incremental reform does not get you to the singularity. It gets you to the door, but it doesn't get you across the brink. And what's really needed is a completely different view of what constitutes education in the world, not just in the United States, but in the world. The emphasis on credential that has arisen in the last 30 years, in the last 50 years, while it's an interesting idea and has fulfilled a certain level of need in terms of certifying that a person who has the credential has some rudiment of knowledge. The problem is that the credentials themselves have become more and more degraded in terms of what they mean in terms of what people know. There's a common axiom that the bachelor's degree is the new high school diploma, and it's rapidly becoming the case that the master's degree is the new bachelor's degree. A few cynical people might argue that the master's degree is the new high school diploma. I don't know that I could disagree with that. Having seen some of the ways that graduate students, write, having seen some of the logical constructions that some of my graduate students have tried to pose it, makes me believe that there's probably more truth to that than I'd like to believe. So it's an interesting challenge. How do we deal with this? And what do we do? How do we deal with it instead? Because at the moment, there's no real good way to determine whether or not anybody has the skills that their diploma says they have. I have a bachelor's in business administration with a minor in marketing. Now, one might argue that I actually have a fair amount of knowledge in that. I'm not sure that it would be entirely true. Knowing what I know about degrees, knowing what I know about expert versus novice thinking, I'd have to actually question that, because while I think I have a pretty good grasp, the reality is I'm still a novice. And so as a novice, I don't really understand what I don't know. So it seems that what I do know is a bigger component of the field than it actually is. This is an interesting challenge. Of course, I have been working in the field of marketing for the last 5 years, working in social media with new media marketing, and looking at the things that work, looking at the things that don't, looking at the people who succeed, looking at the people who haven't. There are a few people who have succeeded very well on the basis of some old school marketing ideas. Most of the people who try to adopt old school marketing ideas to new media fail miserably. And by miserably, I mean their own misery, because it's very difficult to spend that amount of time and money and effort and have so little to show for it at the end. So anyway, what would education be like if we were to invent school today? What would it look like? The problem is that one of the issues that school solves, one of the problems that is resolved by having school, public school in America, is a daycare. And while nobody really wants to say that, the reality is that if there wasn't a school for kids to go to during the day, our labor force would be cut quite dramatically. Now, it's not that it would be cut in half, because some people would opt for professional daycare. Good morning. And to a certain extent, that's probably a good thing. The problem is that for a lot of people, the amount that it would cost to put their kids in daycare would not be offset by the amount of their earnings. So they can't really afford to get the second job, because they're going to just pay it all out in daycare. And there's no point to that, because there's more to a job than the income you get from it. Every job carries with it a certain amount of cost. Just the commuting cost alone is worth a fair amount these days, particularly depending on where and how you're doing it. So this idea that we do away with schools is somewhat problematic in terms of the economics. Now, on the one hand, that would probably pretty much take care of the unemployment problem, because I would conservatively estimate that we would cut about 25% of the workforce right out. All those people who are working in minimum wage service jobs wouldn't be able to afford to do it anymore. Which raises an interesting question as to what happens to those communities that rely on sales tax. The other side of it is that those communities wouldn't incur the cost of teacher expenses. And we would add 7 million teachers to the unemployment rolls almost overnight. Because if there's no school, then there's no need for teachers. Some of them might all offer to open tutorships, opportunities to learn tutoring, to tutor students in advanced courses, to go back to the original school idea where teachers recruited their students from the community and only took them on if they paid, which is actually not a bad idea. Right now, we still do it with things like music lessons. I think that's the most common application, is that you find a music teacher in your community and you go study with them for an hour on Saturday or something. And you pay them a flat amount per hour for their teaching. Voice lessons, music lessons. And if there were algebra lessons, and if there were history lessons, would you do it? Would it be worth doing? Would it be any worse than what we have right now? I think it might be, because there are a lot of people who wouldn't bother. And really simple skills like reading and writing would probably fall by the wayside. I don't know that that's true. Honestly, I really don't know if that's true or not. It does raise some interesting questions, though. It might show up in a story someday. I'll have to think about that a little bit. So, I'm on the last leg here. Heading for the barn and more breakfast. I think I mentioned before that I realize that the daily weigh-in is not something that's appropriate, not something that's really a good idea. But I have to train myself to weigh in every day so that when the time comes to weigh in, I go get up and go weigh in. Because if I don't, then on the day that I'm supposed to do it, I forget. And it doesn't happen, and I don't get it done. So, be that as it may, I'll continue to weigh in daily, but try not to get too bent out of shape when things don't exactly go the way I think they need to go. I do get to set goals. I weigh in on the Wii Fit, so I have a very accurate digital scale. And the Wii Fit has a setting on it so that my goal weight and a time frame, which helps me keep track of how many goals I've made. That is a pretty accurate scale. All right, I made it. I'm at the back gate. Tomorrow is another day. I'll talk to you then.